Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/FTSW. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Come to Air Temple Island, the new home.
I'm the Avatar. You gotta chill with it.
You're the Avatar, and I'm an idiot.
You're a firebender. Boil it yourself.
Go away, Mako.
Don't worry. I will protect you, my feeble turtle duck.
I will make no such promises.
Bolin's got some moves, huh?
You amuse me. I will make you mine.
We shall meet again soon, beautiful woman.
I can't wait to get started. Yes! Finally!
Hello and welcome to From the Spirit World, a legendary Avatar The Last Airbender and the Legend of Korra podcast for Dongu Fang Datnet. I'm your main host, Dylan, and today I'm joined by Allie.
I'm first because Mel's not here.
Delaney.
Hello.
And Jeff.
Probably the most positive sounding person here.
Today we're going to be discussing Old Wounds and Original Airbenders, which aired tonight.
Wounds indeed.
Episode 6 and 7 of Book 3. I apologize if we are not as peppy.
We meaning you. I'm just dying inside.
Okay, inside. Episode 7 was kind of intense and very emotional, and we'll get to that. But first, we're going to talk about Old Wounds. Info on the podcast and stuff at the end. I don't really think there's any news to go over. Just a reminder that the Comic-Con panel is next Friday.
And none of us are going! Yay!
Hooray! But if you follow the... Oh, there's news. But if you follow the DF Tumblr, you will see all updates from the panel. There are four titles since the... Since the last podcast, episodes, 9 to 13, Long Live the Queen, The Ultimatum, Enter the Void, and Venom of the Red Lotus. Lots of theories about that, but we'll focus on them at a later time, I guess. I guess the other bit of news is the continued low ratings for Korra.
Surprise.
Low 1 millions. I'm a little worried since there wasn't an episode promo at the end of this. That kind of gives them an easy... way to pull next week's episode because there's been no promotion for it yet.
Right? Why would they pull it?
Because it's getting terrible ratings and they just move it somewhere else. But yeah, I want to see some confirmation.
But
that
like they just stop
week.
It?
They would probably not just stop it.
They can move it to Nicktoons.
Move it to Nicktoons, move it to a different time. They could just stop it. That does happen sometimes.
The way you were saying it made it, you sound like it stopped it.
That's the worst case scenario, but probably not.
That's the one thing I think that will not happen.
They could leap.
It's not going to happen.
I have a hard time seeing. Okay, at the very least, I have a hard time seeing them keeping it at this time slot because
they might move it. I could see.
Okay, the time slot. Yeah, but they're not going to like pull the show.
They're not going to cancel it, but pulling it is different.
Yeah, that's what
you can just stop airing it. Like you can just stop airing a show for a while. But anyway, Comic-Con next week. Dongufang.tumblr.com. All the updates. I do this every year. Kind of, it's very intense. Not as intense as this week, though. This week's episode. Okay, let's start with Old Wounds.
No, it's pretty intense.
Episode 6. What? Give me your initial thoughts on this episode. Did you like it? How is it? Has it held up to the rest of the season? Let's start with Allie.
I did like it a lot. I saw it in Spanish before, but I'm glad to see it in English now. And I like the flashbacks. I like Gray and Jesse, and that's it. I'm done. I'm not trying anymore.
Had some audio problems there for the record. Okay.
Oh, my God.
Delaney, what do you think?
Well, first off, my baby. Yes. Okay. Because, for those who don't know, Lynn is my favorite.
Lynn is everyone's baby.
The episode was amazing. I loved it. And of course, I saw it in Spanish. But of course, the feels are much, more intense with the English voices. And I just really enjoyed it. I mean, I obviously don't think the episode's perfect, but I loved it. It was great. And I think it's like it's holding up. Like this season, it just seems like it's just hitting on the right points everywhere.
Hitting on the sixes.
I almost said it. I almost did.
Hitting on all sixes. I messed up. Did.
Jeff, what do you think?
I also enjoyed it, but at the moment, all the details are sort of like blurring between the two episodes because the last episode was so jarring. I wish not entirely satisfied with Lynn's transformation, but we can talk about that later. I enjoyed all the metal bending stuff. That was cool. And how, like, I don't know how they portrayed Bolin being, like, nervous about metal bending. That was really nice and cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this episode, this is the big one, right, of the season. This is the Lynn backstory episode, and I wanted it to be better than I think it was. It was good, at times very good, but I don't think it holds up to episode 5 or maybe even 2 and 4. I think I think it's underwritten, basically, which I say about every Quar episode except this season. So we're like kind of back to that point. The dialogue is just very matter of fact during the flashbacks. It's like, okay, this is what's happening, and it's not a lot of like details or emotions or things like that. It's just straight. Yeah, it's very very literal. I think it was a successful episode. I thought it was too fast with all the Lynn stuff. But I guess it's more disappointing. I did really like it a lot, and I think it was very good. But I'm slightly disappointed, and we'll get to more of the stuff.
I guess they can't all be phenomenal.
Yeah. They can't all be perfect.
And I don't know.
I think this is the first episode we've had issue, like, not really like an issue, but like where pacing's kind of coming back to be like that was really like, not like they're shifting back to how it was, but like this is an episode that pacing was almost an issue.
I feel like if the dialogue is better, then the pacing is irrelevant. But I do agree. Yes. There were spots of I don't think that was the main problem, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
No, I agree it's the dialogue. But at the same time, like, bluntness kind of works because it's the Beifongs. That's kind of their thing.
Yeah. Like, it's not like the episode doesn't work, but...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, really I have a real issue that we can talk about in a few minutes, I guess.
Yeah, and I guess it's a little jarring. I mean, all of you seem to agree on this, but I think a lot of people think this is, one of the best episodes. And I don't really see that.
I mean, like, I'm, like, a Lynn fanatic, and I'm still like, bah! And then, of course, I still recognize, the issues that the episode has.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you're giving it too little credit. I think it was really good. Like, the problems weren't even that bad.
Yeah, I guess this is, like my overall reaction is more of, I wish it was better, rather than, wow, this was really good. Even though it was good, it was just, like...
I don't really see how it could be better, though. I mean, I guess we'll talk about it.
But...
Okay, let's get to some specifics, and I think the big thing with the episode is the flashbacks, the...
Great Delisle,
Lynn and Stu backstories. Yeah, Great Delisle voices young Lynn, and Jesse Flower, voice of Toph in Avatar, voices young Sue, which we'd known about because the leak episodes for a while, but it was still pretty cool. What do you think of Jesse Flower?
Love it.
Great. Yes.
I was surprised that I really thought she was going to be like Gray and sound like her original character, but you heard Toph a little bit, but.
I don't think Ray sounded like Azula that much.
Oh, yes, she did.
You could hear it, but she sounded
different. I could really tell that
she sounds like Azula,
like,
when she's Ming-Hwa anyway.
Like, it sounded a lot like the Toph voice. I'm like, just like when she got high pitch, which is what I like. Like, when she's really emotional, she sounds like young Toph.
Yeah.
I got really excited.
Me too. But I'm also glad that she didn't sound like Toph the whole time. Yes. Like, I was so worried that was going to happen. And I'm not talking about how Gray sounded like Azula when she did young Lynn. I'm talking about when she sounded like Azula when she's doing Ming-Hwa.
Oh, okay.
She dead up sounds like Azula.
I think there's a world.
I mean, I love Gray, but she's.
There's a world of difference between Jesse Flower doing Sue and Dante Basco coming back for General Iron.
Oh my god. That would have been a better one, actually.
Dante Basco sounds exactly like.
Dante Basco doing.
Yeah, bring Dante Basco to
divorce himself.
What? Young
But Jesse Flower said, why not? I think it's a lot. I can think of a lot of reasons, but Jesse Flower didn't sound that much like Toph at all. I mean, this is kind of a consequence of the fact that
she got older.
Jesse was like 12. Yeah. She was actually 12 when she voiced Toph, and now she's like 18 or something. She's more like our age. So she's just going to sound different. I think it was just a good idea, and that was really cool.
But you can still hear the undertone. Like, you could tell.
Yeah,
the same
a little bit. A little bit. Maybe if we didn't know, we wouldn't catch it. I'm not sure.
I felt like I would have noticed.
Yeah,
granted,
at one part,
obsessed,
she really
so.
Did something off.
Because I had actually forgotten which voice actor was going to come back and voice whom. So I heard this episode, this scene. I was like, wait a minute, It took me a while to identify which voices.
Yeah, right. I don't think it was super obvious.
Well, it wasn't super obvious, but at some parts it was.
Oh, it was there. Like, it was there.
And of note, Jesse Flower will be on the Comic-Con fan panel. Hosted by Avatar Mom, so that's gonna be cool.
It would be sad.
She's
if we
cool. She sent me a T-shirt.
It's a really young
Jesse Flower.
No,
Avatar Mom is cool. Yes,
but Jesse Flower's cool too.
Yes.
If we get a flashback to young Kaya, I want May Whitman.
Why did she send
back.
You a T-shirt?
Because I asked her for it.
Okay, we can get that.
Does it
later.
Say Melon?
Anyway,
on it?
The Lynn and Sue. So the dialogue is very literal. I think it's it's interesting. I guess I kind of want to talk more high level because I'm focusing too much on specifics here. Like, the content of these flashbacks is, it's like, it's interesting. It's, Sue and Lynn, you know, like, trouble with them when they're younger, and then the whole arresting scene. And then the scene with Toph afterwards, cleaning up the... What do you think of the whole concept of, like, this conflict and then what Toph has to do to, like, clean up the family scandal?
I feel like she could have handled it a lot better.
Yeah.
A lot better.
But at the same time, like, I feel hesitant to, like, really... I don't know. Because I could see... Because part of me is, like, I completely see why she did this.
Yeah.
But then, of course, we don't know what she's... Like, especially going through the stuff with Yukon and all that stuff. Like, we don't, like... I just feel like we need more flashbacks as, yeah, like, a context for how Toph has changed, because she's so different, and, you know, she looks so old in the flashbacks, you know what I mean? No, I don't mean, like, obviously she's older, but she looks so old for what her age would have been.
She looks so stressed.
Yeah, and it's just, like, I kind of want some more context.
Yeah, because I'm, like, reading this awesome book series where they hardly ever spell out anything. It's always allusion and, you know, references, and so, that. Like, when I hear her say... You know, we have no choice is what we have to,
like,
do.
Like, why do you have no choice?
Yeah. But, like, I don't feel like we don't have enough info. I feel like...
Oh, yeah.
If we need more info, we'll get it. And until then, I'm going to trust that she has a good reason for what she's doing.
I agree, yeah.
Yeah.
From, like, a writing perspective, what do you think of the content of these, like, as how you represent this conflict?
I hope that, like, the selection of flashbacks was, like, yeah, like, which ones they picked, that was, yeah, a good choice. Like, that was the best way, I think, to present the situation, like, were those three specific flashbacks. Not necessarily, maybe if something different might have happened, but, like, those flashbacks, like, those moments in their life, like, that was, like, the best way, I think, to present it.
We should mention this episode's written by Katie Matilla. Back on Korra, she worked on Avatar, she wrote The Beach. And directed by, I don't remember actually who directs this, but it's like,
good job.
We're
yelling about it like an hour ago.
It must be Ian Graham. Yeah, it's Ian Graham. Because they go in order. And Colin Heck did the last one. Yeah, I believe that's true. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know how effectively, I don't know. I want to talk about this line. What are you going to do, officer? Arrest me. That Sue says to Lynn, who's the cop that's right there.
Yes, I will.
Yeah, what do you think you are, the police?
This is just such an odd line. Like,
I'm glad other people felt this way, because I was just like, what?
I feel like she said it
because she's like, we're family. You're not going to do that.
Yeah, but then she didn't say it like that. Like, it should have been worded better if they were going for that, because it just... Like, because using officer, like, obviously was throwing it in her face, but, like, the phrase itself doesn't make as much sense than,
yeah,
like
in real life, like, if you said, next time, if I ever wind up getting arrested, that's what I'm going to say.
Or, like, if she just said, what are you going to do, arrest me, as opposed to officer?
For the record, I've never been arrested. Just saying.
Yeah, I think, like, I got what she was going for, but I thought, like, you know, it's just a stupid thing to say to a police officer in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think the big question is, do you guys like how this is that Lynn got her scars?
No.
Yeah.
To be honest.
I love that we find out.
Yeah,
glad we find out.
Like, I'm glad we find out, but I don't like how it happened.
Okay, so I think there's two parts. One part is that Lynn got this through family drama. I think that's really good. Like, I think that works, and that's more meaningful than some random fight that she had.
But it was really anticlimactic.
But it was anticlimactic, like, the physical way she
and
did it. It just kind of happened.
And the scene was terrible. Like, when it's, like, in slow motion and it's coming at her, I hated it.
I don't think it was terrible. But
it was stupid.
Yeah.
What do you think,
Jeff?
I
just didn't like...
If it was faster, I wouldn't have understood what was happening.
You needed to slow it down. I agree.
I just thought it looked dumb.
Yeah, me too. I get why they slowed it down, and it makes sense, but it looks stupid.
Yes, it looks stupid.
Yeah, like... For me, when I watched it, like, the moment it hit her, I was like, so, like, I got the reaction that they were hoping
okay,
for.
Okay, good.
Yeah, me too. But it's...
I mean, I can't remember. Watching, like, the Spanish.
You can't remember, are you kidding?
It was a month ago we saw this. Like, it's
been a while. We just watched it on TV.
Like, Spanish part, I was like, oh my god, Lynn! And
I did think this episode might have been better.
And even this time, I was like, oh my god, Lynn!
What actually bothers me more about this episode isn't the flashbacks so much as, like, when they're in present time and, like,
being stupid.
Okay, the worst part to me is when she leaves the acupuncturist and then she's sitting there and then she goes back. Like, I hate that. I just
I don't get it.
The framing is odd. Yeah.
Like, I understand why, because she was hallucinating, but, like, we needed something else, because then it just was like, what? This makes no sense.
Yeah. So, yeah, the framing device for the flashbacks is that she goes to get acupuncture, which is interesting on its own.
Yes.
I think that the reason she needs it is because of the stress she's under seemed random.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it seemed forced. I think the framing.
Well, I mean, it actually, the stress wasn't really random because she was like around her sister.
She was upset last episode. You didn't really get stress from it, I don't think. So I thought that.
It can lead to stress.
I can understand that, but it was very abrupt, I would say.
That's the best way to describe like this episode. Just abrupt.
And as a framing device, she was there. They had a little scene. It ended. She left. She came back.
Part killed me. Mm-hmm. I was just like, can we not?
I don't think it's very important. I think that it's not the focus of the episode. It's like, if you're looking at the picture, like the two thirds, like you're going to be looking at the flashbacks, like thinking about it. Like those parts are just so unimportant. Yeah. But if you want a complete and good, well-rounded episode, you need to have all of it, like be there. And it wasn't necessarily.
That's my biggest issue with it, is that part, like the in-between. I'm just like, what?
So then Lynn comes out of these very upset, and she goes and just basically just fights Sue. She's like, 1v1 me. And,
which I felt that was very accurate. Does. I enjoyed that.
Was
that.
Very Beifong-y.
It was very, yes, exactly Beifong-y, yes.
That's a new noun.
Adjective.
I'm tired.
My favorite part of that is just everyone being like, oh, just let him do. Fight
yeah.
Poland's like, you don't have any siblings.
Yeah.
This is healthy.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Fighting is healthy.
Yes. Really?
You can attest to that.
I have a sibling.
you've earthbended and fought your sibling
yes,
before.
My brother and I have.
I pillow bended.
I had an Agni Kai with my people brother. I know that feel.
You do. Jeff, what do you think of this this fight and the emotions behind it and stuff?
I don't remember being like incredibly blown away by the martial arts.
Yeah.
It was good. It's all good.
Yeah, I think this is like...
Nothing was subpar.
I agree. It wasn't subpar. I think this was the weakest action sequence so far this season, but that's saying too much because every action sequence this season has been incredible.
Like, yeah, that's saying more about everything else being awesome.
Yeah, I agree. This was just kind of like there, and I think maybe...
it was the worst.
What was?
I disagree that it was the worst, because we'll talk about the next episode. But...
Oh, okay, well, I'm not even thinking about next episode yet. I think it was an intentional choice so they could focus more on the emotions behind it, which, I don't know. And so I think the...
But at the same time, I think they expressed well, like, how, like, the mastery both of them possess with their mending. Like, I feel like that came across really well.
I think so, too. And I think The big thing is how fast Lynn just like gives it up, right? So I think what this is supposed to be communicating is like that the acupuncture and the like facing her memories is been successful, and she just needed to get it out of her system, right?
Yeah.
Do you think it worked? Like, it seemed very fast that happened.
Like her passing out made sense.
Oh, like in the end?
Is that not what we're talking about?
I'm confused. Wait, what's the question?
She's upset, and then they fight, and then she's fine. That's what I'm saying.
But she passes out, and she sleeps for like 16 hours. What was it?
Yeah, that was 16 hours.
Okay, she passes out.
I mean,
it kind
of makes sense. I agree that it was rushed, but I think it works well.
Like, if it had just been stretched out a tiny bit, I feel like it would make more
sense.
So, Annie,
you're the big Lynn fan. How do you feel emotionally with Lynn?
Wow, thanks for ignoring me. I'm a Lynn fan, too.
Okay. How do you feel, Delaney? How do you feel emotionally with Lynn throughout this entire thing?
Well, like, and I love Lynn so much, and of course I was just really excited about having, a real Lynn episode, and I did feel like I'm not wholly satisfied with the episode, and I just feel like... Like, the emotional journey makes sense to me. Like, a lot of people are like, why is Lynn so mean all the time? But, like, it makes sense because it's Lynn and she's been alone. And especially the throwaway line, well, not the throwaway line, but, like, the dig that Sue does. Like, clearly Lynn is still struggling with, like, everything with Tenzin and, like, her mom.
Let's talk about that for a sec. That line.
That was just mean.
That was just rude.
Which line are we talking about? Just be clear.
No wonder Tenzin ended things with you years ago. Yeah.
Like, ouch. And so obviously, like, Lynn has all this stuff just boiling around all the time. So I feel like, you get that more toward the end because of that line, that, like, it makes sense. But, like, I don't know. Like, it just felt really, like, rushed and kind of clunky, like, her emotional journey in the episode.
I feel like that line has no basis. Tenzin's not even mentioned in the rest of the episode. I don't understand why she said that.
Well, I could see it as, like, it's the only dig she could think of. And also because Korra says in the previous episode, no wonder you're just going to be a bit, whatever she says, like,
yeah,
you're just going to be alone and bitter.
Yeah. And she does say alone, I think.
Yeah, so it's like that, yeah, like, it's the emphasis on you're alone, and, like, you haven't, she hasn't talked to her sister, she hasn't talked to her mom, and then, of course, the whole thing with Tenzin. So, like, I'd really, like, it's not, like, obviously they probably should have, like, focused on it a bit more about her being alone. So,
I don't think it's a
full emotional journey, so I'm hoping we'll get a little bit more.
The criticism of that line that I would have is that it's like we're having this great female-female interaction and fight. And
then you have to,
like,
throw in the guy,
to throw in the guy, yeah, even when there's no basis for that. It just doesn't really make sense to me.
I can see, just watching the episode, like, especially if you don't, like, just disregarding episode 5, it's like, really? Like, and we haven't even touched upon Tenzin and Lynn since, like, season 1.
I would be a lot faster to criticize this if this episode wasn't written by a woman. But, like, yeah. So it gets somewhat of a pass, I guess, but I don't know.
Since we have so little about Lynn, like, a lot of people, like, it's like a lot of people are kind of on the fence, like, can we criticize Lynn for acting this way? We don't really know her character. And then, so, like, I feel like they felt the need to do this because this is the only thing we have about Lynn that we know. This is the only concrete thing she's heard about.
Yeah, okay.
I see
what you're saying. Yeah.
So, like, we need more. And, like, this episode, they added, like, a little bit more, but, like, we didn't really get a lot of substance with Lynn. They pretty much recycled stuff we already knew and then just put more Toph in it.
Put more Toph in it.
Yeah, like, well, I meant, like, more about Lynn being upset about her mom.
Okay.
Dylan, when you're judging, like, the episode, should it really, like, matter the identity of the writer?
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. So there's two ways to look at it. One, it could just be, like, anyone wrote that line because it's a collaborative process. Two, I think when you're looking at it's something in terms of, I'm considering, is this sexist? I think it is a relevant factor, but it's not like, it's just a minor factor, you know? So I still brought it up and criticized it despite, you know. Yeah.
Okay. Is so. It
sexist,
and
I feel like it'd
though?
Be even more relevant.
It's not a sexist line. It's just like, it lowers itself from the feminism of this entire episode a little bit, you know? Like, this episode is very feminist, and then but then you just throw in the guy, like, and then you don't maybe need to, and it, like, lowers it a tad.
Tenzin's not even there.
Well, I would say just, like, it's just interpersonal, like, connections. I mean,
it's a very, it's a very girl thing to do. Like, yeah. I mean, as
well, that's the question. Is it a very girl thing to do?
Problem with that
well,
line.
I mean, like, the way girls fight, like, this is, like, the emotional dig. Now, obviously,
yeah, my main problem with this line is not anything involving the fact that it's a guy. It's just that there's no foundation, which we've discussed.
Yes.
And you can disagree or agree, because there's the loan foundation, or the fact that this is the only thing.
There's foundation.
There's a slight... Anyway.
Like, we have so little characterization about Lynn.
Yeah, so I like that point better, maybe. It's just like, what do we even know about
that's
Lynn?
That's how I feel about it, is because there's so little about Lynn. And honestly, I feel like we've gotten more character... We've created a more full character in Sue than Lynn, and we've had her for 2.5 seasons. Like, they created Sue, and we have all this stuff, and I'm like, really? Really? Like, I'm really upset about it,
actually. Do you think that's true after this episode?
Yes.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, because, we don't know, we basically know nothing about Lynn.
They just recycled everything, and then, like, now we know she has real mommy issues.
Yeah, I mean, we know the scars thing, which we didn't know before, but that's just the, we know her family.
That's so important.
I don't know. Let's go to the B plot of the episode, which is the metal bending stuff.
Oh, well, there's also, like, the whole Lynn transformation. Are we talking about that after the fact, or?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to group that in with everything. But, she's nice after she wakes up. Yeah.
Which
on,
like,
I'm
exactly,
waiting for, I'm exactly waiting for an happened. End. Like, I'm waiting for, like, the next episode in Lynn, because I don't want to make an opinion on it yet, because, like, right now I'm kind of mad about it. And then, Just because, like, mainly because they pointed it out. Like, Lynn was such, like, this mean person, and now she's nice. Like, can we not do that?
Jeff?
That's basically exactly what I was thinking when Zuko went through his transformation, which is exactly what Lynn did. Like,
I agree.
Conflict, you go, like, oh, you faint, and then 16 hours later, you wake up and you drink some awful thing.
Yeah.
It's very similar, and I think that's a good analogy. Like, what episode is that? The Earth King?
And think it's good.
That's right after Lake Lao Guy.
Yeah, it's the Earth King. I think both episodes are kind of similar in that they just have these, just very and rushed.
I remember thinking, no, I don't want Zuko to be nice.
Oh, he wakes up.
That's Zuko's spiritual transformation.
Yeah, he almost dies and he's so sick.
I think it's a good analogy. Both are too fast.
It's the best. Another more evidence that book 3 is just book 2 Earth.
It is.
Undergoing a transformation.
I think Zuko's was faster. Lore is Beifong,
she was always meant to be.
Zuko's had less behind
Zuko's
it.
Also an angsty teenage boy, and we have Lynn, who is a 50-year-old, so I feel like it makes a tad more sense with the angsty teenager.
But then Zuko reverts back afterwards, so it absolves that. So we have to see where it goes with Lynn.
That's why I said I need another episode before I will have a full opinion.
Yeah. Okay, B-plot. The metal bending stuff. I feel like, do we think Korra learns too fast here?
You're the first Avatar to metal bend. They literally just discovered metal bending, like, 70 years ago. Can you calm down about it for a minute?
But we do know that Aang never metal bend.
Yeah, that was the big point of that, I think.
Yes.
What do you think Bolin's reaction to all of this?
I love it.
It's very Bolin. That's really the only thing. I hate it because I feel I have nothing for Bolin. I have no feelings until they, like, because they're doing his character. So, like, because, like, what they're doing to his character is like Sokka, but less. And, like, the only reason I like Sokka is because they did more stuff with Sokka. So I'm waiting for them to do more stuff with Bolin so I can like him. Like, I don't hate him.
They did so much better.
Like, Bolin's just there.
Yeah.
I feel like this is the sort of thing that they're doing to get us.
Yes, I do feel like this episode, I'm like, I kind of like you as a person now.
But they're not doing it well. They're trying, but they're really not. I know they're trying, but they're really not doing it that well. I did like what they did, but I feel like they're going to kind of go backwards with this.
Like, I don't even know if I want him to actually be able to metal bend.
I do, just because.
But at the same time, though, like, if they're building this all up, obviously he's going to metal bend. But at the same time, so what? Like, is that really character development if he can metal bend?
I don't think it's obvious that he's going to wind up metal bending. They might go backwards and be like, oh, let's bring him back to the stupid thing.
Well, I just feel like I feel like it'd actually be more character development for him, like,
to not
metal
bend.
So what? You can't metal bend. What's it matter?
That's interesting. Yeah. I kind of still want to see him metal bend, though.
I don't know.
That is a good point, though.
Would this be a good point to bring up that email, since we're talking about it?
No, let's wait. I think this is this plot is overshadowed very clearly by the Lynn plot. I didn't have too much of a reaction to anything about the metal bending, honestly.
Yeah, I was kind of just like, meh, they're metal bending.
Yeah, it's...
But the meteorites, I was like, feels...
I think you kind of have
to
totally
do... They totally plugged the Sims.
I did like how Opal called him out.
Okay, well, that's the next thing. But I think that you have to do it like this, because that can't hold an A-plot on it. Yeah, I heard you. You can't do the A-plot. You can't carry an A-plot on its own. But it gets overshadowed by a B-plot, so, like, where do you put it? But anyway, then it gets more interesting with the whole Bolin and Opal, their comforting scene, which I thought was the best part of that, the entire B-plot, if you want to put it like that.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a really, a mature scene for Bolin.
Oh, definitely.
Like, almost out of character.
Yeah, I was like, wow.
But it was, I thought it was good, and... Who all of us on board shipping the Bopal at this point?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And Allie dropped the call. I know she is too. Okay.
What was it? You had said something about Korra. Like, I didn't really think it was quick. She's the Avatar. Bolin's reaction about I know why he said it. You know, you're 1 in 100. But then it's like, she's the Avatar. Calm down. Like, you don't need to be in this little pity party. Like, she's the Avatar. Like, the only reason she can earthbend.
You saw shades of the waterbending scroll in this episode, definitely. Which is the Avatar episode.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, why?
Because of the whole envy of someone doing something before.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a good point. Like, that's a good thing to do. But, but there isn't any we haven't seen any resolution with that either, because we had resolution in the waterbending scroll.
But with Korra, I mean, we've seen how fast of a learner she is, except for with airbending.
Well, we didn't really see her learn the other elements, but yeah.
But we saw her, I mean, at least with, like, not, like, actually air bending, but we saw her, like, learn the techniques and stuff.
I mean, okay.
I know it's different.
I don't have any comments on it. Okay. Villain plot stuff. Or, no, Varric.
Iron Man.
Iron Man Varric.
Iron Man, yes.
Why is he...
with, like, the red circle on chest.
They have to be going somewhere with that, right? Like, they're not just gonna...
He's just gonna show up. That's what Varric does. He just shows up and there's stuff that happens. So, and then he leaves.
It's like, you think of all the plot threads that they're gonna have to get to in 6 episodes and throw in Varric's yeah. new magnets. That's gonna factor in somehow. So, like, how is that gonna do anything? You know what's gonna happen is he's gonna contract stuff to the Earth Queen's army. Or vice versa.
Yep, that's
something like
happen.
That. Yeah,
we're gonna have some mega like I could see them because like you know Zalfu's all metal bending and then he like switches over to the Earth Queen, so like that would benefit her because they're metal benders. There's not, you know what I mean? Like it would benefit the Earth Queen.
Yeah,
I'm more seeing with Republic City.
With yeah. Republic City, it's some. He's gonna do something for some this conflict.
He's gonna do something sketchy.
That's what I'm saying. Okay, the villain plot is also I think overshadowed, but they commandeer this car and escape the city.
Hooray. Also, they're living in a tree in Republic City, like in the middle of the city, and no one realized. No one realized, really. Good job.
I think the most comments on any of the action pieces.
Yeah. Oh, action pieces, not so much.
Just the villains, other than the end, which
I still don't like the fact that he can.
Can we talk about Combustion Woman? Is like 9 feet tall. Seriously, she's so tall.
Is she? I didn't notice that.
She's at least like 2 feet taller than what's his name? Zaheer.
I mean, we saw that.
Thank you, Allie. He's so tall. She's so tall.
She's tall.
I think the most notable part about any of the villain stuff is the ending where we see Zaheer meditating.
Yeah.
He was also meditating in the tree, which is a spirit, and so he's doing the like all everything is connected stuff from the swamp.
Ooh,
I don't know if he is, but that's interesting.
I like that.
So the thing that he just randomly says there in the Metal City. They're with the Metal Clan at the end.
He
projects like,
himself and track people. Apparently.
Okay, how do you know that?
Because he did the same thing Aang did with Appa.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like with Naga? What does that even mean?
No, with Appa. Like back in the swamp.
In the swamp? I don't know if that's
what doesn't have
they're not. They're not explicitly going for that at the very least.
No.
I think they're going for what Jinora
They're just talking of, yeah, like, yeah, that's what I was about to say. He can be, it seems like they're saying he can do what Jinora does.
I don't know if that's what they're saying because they didn't show any of that. It's obviously ambiguous, right?
Yeah.
What do you think it would be then?
I don't know.
Well, then we have theories.
Yes.
I'm just saying we have to add this to the. This is another thing added to the list of things to cover in the 6 episodes.
Yes.
So I don't know. But anyway, the notable thing.
When we thought book 2 was really complicated and tying all these plots together, now we're in book 3 and we're like, oh my god,
there's even more.
No idea.
It's literally Game of Thrones.
It seriously is though.
Zaheer meditating. It makes it very obvious he's doing something spiritual.
I'm glad he's finally stopped changing his appearance.
Really?
Now I feel more comfortable.
What do you mean, no, really?
He's got no hair to shave off anymore.
True.
I had a big theory on this last podcast, if you haven't heard, but this meditating kind of helps to back that up.
And the episode title? The finale?
For the finale. Well, it's called... It's called Into the Void, which is... Enter the Void. Not Into the Inferno, Enter the Void. Which is...
Into the Inferno. No, it's called Into the Inferno.
Which is something... Which is, again, quoted in Episode 7, so it's very obvious this is coming back.
Yes.
They've been pretty careful about things they randomly bring up this season. It's just... It's very obvious all of it's coming... Tying together. Which makes me think the Varric thing isn't a throwaway, just to have his character there again. It seems like he's going to be relevant. And it seems like we're going been kind of fast, but I think that's the specifics for this one. We have a big episode to get to for the next one. Let's grade this out of 10. 10 being the best episode of television you've ever seen. 5 being an average episode.
Wait, did we ever talk about the resolution that they had with Lin and Tien?
I mean, we said they made up. They did nothing else really happens.
But like, what did you think about it?
We thought it was rushed. Basically, is what we said.
I thought it was dumb, but okay.
Okay. I liked it, actually.
I was out for that.
I mean, it was nice to have a happy ending, but...
Well, yeah, but it was stupid.
Anyway.
Well,
I promise not to kill you?
Okay. That's what you're saying. Whatever. Yeah. It was my reaction to that.
I thought it was very Beifong-y, and I approve.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. whatever.
And the statue. Like, oh, feels the statue.
She has too many statues.
Is that a different statue?
Yes.
Do we know that?
Yes.
Okay. So
one has rust on it. Like, there's rust at the bottom of it.
Okay, so we're up to three statues now. So
yeah.
We'll need four more to have the seven Horcruxes.
Yes.
For statues. Okay.
And then,
what? So she has a statue in Aang's and Zuko's statues?
No, four more Toph statues. She's not very clever with where she's hiding.
You know there's like three in Gao Ling.
Oh.
Yeah, that's...
There's like, the rest of them are just in Gao Ling.
They can be in Omashu too. There's a lot of places we haven't seen yet. Okay. Allie, what would you grade this and why?
I'd say seven. Because, I mean, I did like it, but some parts of it... I mean, I guess what you were talking about, it did feel kind of rushed, but I did really like the flashbacks, and I did like the fight, and I the only thing I really didn't like was how they made up, because it was really kind of dumb, but I did like it. It was really good, but I think I'd give it a seven.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Delaney.
Not good at explaining things. You know this.
I am the most consistent grader ever.
Yeah, I don't describe my stuff.
I guess an 8.5.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. It's Lin, but I mean, I definitely think there are some issues, but just in comparison, you know, first and second season, I mean, this episode's just great. Just high quality.
We never heard your grade for episode 5 because you weren't on last week. Well, out of curiosity, what would you give that?
Oh, goodness.
Would it be higher than 8.5 or lower?
I guess I'd probably make it, especially now that we've talked about and I've fleshed out my opinions, I'd probably give episode 5 a higher grade.
Okay.
Like, as an episode itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Jeff, what would you give this episode, episode 6?
I'd say just a solid 7. I think that's probably what I gave last episode. I mean...
You can't rate the same episode the same number.
Well, I didn't mean to. It just came out to
that. Okay. Any comments?
Enjoyable.
Yeah.
It wasn't a high point. Its derivative was definitely zero and no, non-zero. Yeah.
Anyway. Good. Math aside,
yes.
I don't know. If you wouldn't listen to this week, I was incredibly high on episode 5. This one, I'd say, it seems like I've just been very negative, but I'd still give it an 8, I think. I think it was solid. I think maybe that's too high. I need to reevaluate. But I was going to give it an 8.5, but I'll give it an 8 now.
And just because I gave it an 8.5.
No. Really? It's while I started talking about it.
My God, I'm seeming more like a pessimist than you. This is not true.
7's good.
I'm still very high on the season. I know I've been...
He gave it an 8.
We'll get to see again. We'll see next episode how high I am this season.
Jared.
Okay.
There was the time Dylan gave episode a 9 and I almost died.
I gave episode... I don't know if you listened yet, but I gave episode 5 a 9.75 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm still over the... God. I'm in the 4 about that.
Okay, anyway. Before we get to the next episode, Mel would like to say bees? ? To the listeners, just so you know. Okay, let's...
Bees? Let's... Sam says hi, too.
Yeah, okay, there. They just got back from actually doing things Friday night. Yeah, unlike us. Okay. Original Airbenders, episode 7.
Me, guys.
Written by Tim Hedrick, directed by Melchior Zwyer. This episode is incredibly emotional. I'm sorry. We're going to have trouble discussing it. Allie, what did you think overall?
Oh my God. I still have my Air Bison in my lap. I'm never letting him go. But I did like it. We were kind of all talking about this before, but I don't know if I like it. It's really filler, and it's kind of a feel good episode, except for all that stuff. But I don't really know if I like it that much because it was really, nothing happened, but I did like it a lot, and I'm still crying.
You mean nothing happened plot wise, arc wise?
That's what, when I say nothing happened, I mean nothing happened with the plot, and that's how I rate the episodes, I think.
I'm not too big on calling it this filler. I don't know. We'll get
that's
to my...
I agree,
really filler.
I know it's filler. Who cares, though?
I'm just saying. That's why I don't know what to rate it.
That's
because I personally...
You can relate an episode on its quality. Have plot relevance, but who
cares? I personally go by plot.
Yes, this episode had plot relevance. Anyway.
How did you grade anything in book 2? That's my question.
I really had a hard time.
Delaney, what do you think overall?
like this so hard.
I loved it. I don't care if it was filler, and I don't think it was filler. It was beautiful. And I have Appa in my lap too. Beautiful. I have lots of issues right now and feelings, and I'm about to cry. But I really enjoyed it. It was such a great. I loved it. It's fantastic.
Let me go back because I filler is not a bad thing. I'm just saying it's filler, but it's not a bad thing.
Okay, it's not.
I don't think
okay.
It's filler, and I have a reason, and I guess we can get into it like in a few minutes.
Jeff, what do you think?
I loved it. I mean, we get like this emotional manipulation, which is so, we get second order acknowledgement of Jinkai or Kainora, whatever. Because people are calling him boyfriend girlfriend now.
People, yeah. I heard.
Tenzin knows.
And we get talk about tattoos, yes. And we get
like everything good is in this
episode.
We get
the return of Melon Lord.
Yes, but they
not
didn't
exactly.
Say it, and I wanted them to say it.
Yeah. I don't. This is so. It should be noted that for a lot of us, this was the first episode back after the leaks. So this is the first one in a month, and the first one we don't know any idea what's going to happen since book two. So it's just that plus this being the most emotional episode ever is just very overwhelming.
I feel like they didn't mean for it to be emotional, but it really was.
I don't know.
I think they underestimated like our feelings about Sky Bison.
Yeah, see, you guys are very emotional because of the Sky Bison. I don't really care.
What is wrong with you?
Dylan, you'd be the one person I think, of course, I know why you really care about this episode and why it's not Sky Bison, I'm aware, but
I am too.
Think
like,
you should care.
You're the vegetarian here, first of all.
Thank you, Allie. That's
I don't have an emotional connection to the characters Sky Bison.
Oh, my God. You can leave.
I obviously, it's upsetting, but to me, it's just the overwhelming amount of Jinora in this is just incredibly overwhelming.
Okay,
other than those two things, can we talk about Tenzin and Jinora's relationship, please?
Well, yes, Allie, we are going to discuss everything. Okay.
I'm just saying, we have to
let Dylan have his opinion.
No, we don't.
Anyway, yeah, I don't even know if this was good or not. It is good, but it's incredibly hard to judge when I'm just freaking out over just the incredible range of emotions displayed by Jinora this entire episode. And yes. Just her being...
So I'm guessing Jinora, or Kainora is the new... Katang.
Don't let
or Katang.
No.
Katang, exactly. Yes. Thank you.
My God, you just keep.
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing with that. Like
all the time.
It's unclear, but
she's dating a bad boy, so it's obviously not the same.
He's not even a bad boy.
A bad boy doesn't say bisons. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah. So a note is that we hear in the beginning Tenzin lecturing on bison versus bisons as the plural, and then every time Kai says multiple bison, it is bisons. He says it's.
He keeps saying it wrong.
Yeah. Like, it's adorable, but you're ten. Like, come on, figure it out.
What would Tenzin say to his sons on his way to school?
What? What?
Bison. Oh my God!
Bison. Oh.
Joke.
Wow.
That was funny. Good, good
one,
Jeff. I liked that. Good.
Okay.
Oh my God, that flew over my head. Jesus.
Wow.
Slow.
Yeah, me for a while too. Okay. So just too much Jinora I can't handle. Does not compute.
No such thing as too much.
I'm way more emotionally attached to her than any other character on the show by far. It's not close. So this is overwhelming for me.
I know that feel. That's how Lynn was.
Yeah, I can understand. Okay, let's get into the plot points of the episode. That's like the A plot. There's not really ABC. It's more like they blend together because all of it takes place in the Northern Air Temple. But we are at the Northern Air Temple, correct?
Yes.
I need my facts. My brain is disoriented here. Yes, Tenzin, Bumi had their whole training styles for the Airbenders. I feel like this is the premise for the episode, and they had to hit on this. The whole Tenzin tries Bumi's approach of being harsh with them.
I really enjoyed it.
You did? Interesting. Well, explain.
Well, first of all, because Tenzin being awkward is, like, my favorite thing ever. Like, I just love Tenzin. He's so ridiculous. So, like, the fact that Tenzin did that, like, it felt like Avatar. Like, this is something that would happen in Avatar. Like, they're just being dumb for a whole day, and this is what this was. And then, so, like, I just really enjoyed it, and especially, like, Tenzin's facial expressions when he's trying to, like, convince Bumi to help him. Like, I need that gift set for the rest of my life.
Yes. Oh, my God.
Like, his facial expressions.
It's so awesome.
Like, Tenzin is just... Tenzin got all of Aang's awkward, and I love it.
I think this is the best Tenzin episode in the entire series.
By far.
I don't know if I'd say that. I feel I'm a little sick of his taking forever to realize how wrong he is.
I'm also
well, this one wasn't as bad.
I'm also sick of Tenzin, but I feel like that's
no, I'm not sick of him. I'm sick
I feel like that's been worse in every other episode. Like, yes. I think Tenzin's characterization has been very sketchy.
Well, I feel like it makes like it's definitely more understandable this season, especially with the whole Air Nation thing.
It's this has been that plot line's just a blessing to his character. He's gone from just not relevant to just like an actual person now,
and I love it.
Yeah.
And like I just really enjoyed the Boomy Tenzin interaction, and like it was just like I just loved it.
Yeah.
I just love that kind of stuff.
For me, so this is like the premise of the episode, and they had to hit on it, but they also moved on very fast. Like this was only in Act One.
And they handled it well.
Yeah, I think it was okay, but I feel like every part of the episode is just very much stronger than it. Like the whole training of them. I feel like it was ready to move on. But I think it's a sign of a well structured episode that the I'm ready to move on part is at the beginning. And it builds up from there.
They needed to have that for the show anyway, like for the whole idea that we have air nomads. Like this had to happen. We have to have this conflict because like they talk about it, but like we actually need to see it. Like it's something important that needs to happen.
Side note: I'm starting to question whether they're actually like I've always thought. Okay, they're not going to stay airbenders. That's been my opinion until now. But now I'm like, okay, maybe they're actually like keeping these people as airbenders. Is this actually what they're going to do?
To me, the plot point
is so temporary. It's like Boomy's not really going to be an airbender for the rest of the series, right? But now I think he might be, actually.
Like, as far as right now, like, especially how this episode went, like, I'm okay with it. I'm interested to see where they go with it. Especially after the guy was like, you guys have to shave your heads. Like, I'm ready for this.
Yeah. I mean, I was interested in the like at what he said in the end. He's like, I never really felt like a part of the Air Nation. And
Another beyond Jinora, which is 90% of the emotions of this episode for me. The other the Sky Bison's 1%. The other 9% is actually just the feels with all.
You are not a human.
The feels with human. All the Air Nation things. I think it's been very successful. Their kind of exploitation of the emotions.
Especially Kaya in this episode. I know it was kind of felt like, oh, Kaya gets to have a line. What?
Oh, Kaya. I thought you said Kaya.
Kaya, no, I'm talking about Kaya. And if listen, you'll understand. Shut up, I'm talking, okay? Okay. All right. So in the beginning of the episode where Kaya is, you know, making fun of, like, the gurus, that was really important to me talking about, because, you know, we're all like, so Aang didn't really care about any of his other kids and Aaron, but, like, they know the stories and, like, they can joke about it. Like, that was really important to me.
That's true. Yeah, Kaya knew what was going on.
Like, it meant so much to me. And then, of course, Tenzin's reaction, like, yes, I remember. Like,
I hadn't thought of that, actually. That
really, really, like, stuck with me that they did that. And that really ties into Boomy at the end of the episode. I didn't really feel like Aang's kid until, like, today. So I really, like,
that's a good point. This shows in book two, all we got was, oh, Aang didn't give a crap about Boomy and Kaya. And this episode is like, okay, he did. Like, we see it tangibly here. I think that's a very good point. So Kaya's,
that's why this episode's just like every part of this episode's emotional, and I'm just like,
I'm very surprised at how many plot points they addressed here. Like, I didn't think they were gonna ever address the Aang parenting again, and they did here. I didn't think they'd ever address the Jinora tattoos, and they did, which is incredible. Kaya's
managed to throw the Earth Queen into it.
Earth Queen's here. They're keeping that.
She ate
going.
The bear.
I still can't.
Okay, we'll get to that.
Oh, also,
what Pema
was saying too. I'm glad that she brought this up. Like saying that, like even though they're airbenders, that doesn't mean they're all gonna like be monks like really quick. And like I like how she tied in the fact that like when she was
Yes. We'll start at the beginning. Kaya says he stole a necklace that had something to do with Guru Lakshmir.
Which is my favorite line right now. Lakshmir.
Wait, someone has to take that URL. Guru Lakshmir.
How's it spelled, though? Who even knows?
Spell it. Sound it out.
Sound it out. That's a good.
It's not that hard if you're a linguistics major.
Dude, that's not how spelling works. It does not work like that.
Especially not English. It's definitely not how English works.
So beyond the whole, the training, they trained with the obstacle course, and Tenzin woke them up with the Vuvuzela. Is just what I thought that was, and I don't know if anyone remembers those things. Apparently not. And yeah, any other comments on the A plot? Because I want to move on to everything else. The training.
There's
Hilo is evil.
Yeah, Milo.
Oh yeah, Milo's line
Look
was really
left.
Good. Yeah.
My God. Look to your right. One of you will not make it out of here alive.
Oh, just Milo, like, every time this happens, Milo is just doing something incredible.
Milo's lines have improved a lot, other than the,
Also, I'm glad when he was airbending, he didn't fart.
I expected that to happen. Also, because the only other fight scene he's had has been in book one with,
I was really hoping that it wouldn't happen in a day. Yeah. I'm really happy.
Other than the one poop joke they had with, Rohan in one or two, I think. They've been very good with that type of
stuff. No, that wasn't with Rohan. That was with,
Was it with Milo?
No, wait, in this book or the other one?
This book.
That was with the dude who fell off the bridge.
Okay, that and also, did they? Whatever. Anyway,
he threw up, but that's not really.
Threw up. There we go. Whatever. That type of stuff, you know. Janora and Kai go to check out
the
baby bison.
The bison.
And
they're so cute.
The mom, Janora's like, "Don't." The mom's gonna get upset. And the reaction I had to that scene was, I'm glad they didn't cut to commercial while the mom bison was charging.
Same.
I like
oh
thought that
God.
Was gonna happen.
I was so sure they were going
to
do that.
That's a very Avatar-y thing to do there.
It really is.
But they didn't, and they kept going. That was good. And then they just, Kai's like, why don't you have your tattoos yet, Janora? And that
You're
was like,
much
whoa.
Better than your dad.
I don't think he said that, but yeah.
I didn't realize that her skill
he
was actually
did.
On
he
par
did.
With
he did. He said you can do everything your dad can.
And you have the spirity projection thing.
You didn't realize what, Jeff?
That, like, their skill levels were, like, comparable. Mm-hmm. I thought Tenzin was, like, just still master, but nope, guess not.
I had kind of thought about it, especially because of the astral projection and, like, just everything. Just seeing Janora all the time, I just, like, I've been kind of just waiting for it to happen.
They
like,
haven't
necessarily... have her tattoos.
They haven't necessarily did a good job at showing that Janora is good at all forms of airbending.
Yeah.
Certainly we've seen the spiritual side, but we haven't seen the airbending.
They haven't done the show, not tell.
Yeah, exactly. And we kind of saw it this episode. She was very proficient, but it didn't necessarily... But then again, Aang, a lot of times, in season one, didn't seem like he was super incredible at airbending. It's just he was like...
Yeah.
I was like, whoa, this guy's a master?
Yeah.
Like, we just haven't had, like, we haven't had any real instances where she's needed to do something, like, ridiculously incredible, other than, you know, when she saved the world in...
just being on screen.
You would think this episode she would, when she gets captured, like, she would be able to avoid that.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of like,
She was, like, the spirit whisperer for, like, 5 minutes, so...
Yeah, but that's not, again, not an airbending thing, so...
Because, like, airbending, because there's the 32 tiers of, like, the physical actual airbending, so, like, we haven't really seen any of that.
When do we hear 32 tiers?
There are 32 tiers of airbending, or 31, and then 32 is when you get your tattoos.
When do we hear this?
Are you making this up?
No, this is a thing!
Is this a thing that they say in the show, though? That's the thing.
I feel like it is, or it's in my book. I'm gonna go get my little Avatar book.
Yeah, but no, like,
I always thought you only get your tattoos after you make up an airbending.
Yeah, there's 31 or 32 tiers, then you invent
since when is that a thing?
Okay, this is one of those things that's not actually said in the show, so I don't consider it canon. It's like something that they'd say on Nick.com, so it's like, whatever.
Yeah,
well, I've always I've seen it since I was little, so I've accepted it.
What? It's like, find me the quote
like,
in that episode.
Do it, you have the tiers, and then after you're at the end of the tiers, you invent your move, which is, and so Aang
invented
the air scooter.
I've heard the invented move thing. They don't say it in the episode, I'm pretty sure of that. But yeah, it's a thing, but it's not gonna... If they want to talk about it on the show, they'll have to actually say it, because they've never actually said it in the show before, so they'll have to explain it first. So it's like not introduced into the show canon.
Ooh, which means... Janora's gonna have to make up a move.
Yep.
If that's what they do, we'll see. It's also not apparent that Janora's immediately gonna do this, right? They leave it open ended at the end.
Yeah, they do.
She's totally gonna do it though.
So they are talking to the acolyte, and the one acolyte who is the one airbender who was an acolyte before is named Otaku.
Oh boy.
Ali, does Otaku have a literal meaning in Japanese? Like, is it a word that actually has a meaning?
It does, but I don't remember what it is. I can ask a friend.
Well, if it means anything, it's going to mean nerd, right?
Well, I think it means something worse. Like, nerd, it's like implied that it means nerd, but I think it's like more insulting in Japanese.
Well, let's just check Google Translate.
No, Google Translate's not going to... You know,
anyway,
hold on, let me...
The important reason that Otaku is important is because that's the word that people use to refer to, like, anime nerdy people.
Well, I will tell you in a second.
It's like what people in Japan who are obsessed with like anime and manga are called.
It's a person. It's a person who has no social skills.
Okay, that's interesting.
Is what is implied in Japan.
That's another connotation of that too. So calling this guy Otaku,
yeah,
it's like
that's
so
why
weird.
I'm insulted. I'm really mad about
it's just
it.
Like an English word that it's like a Japanese word that people like would know. This is one of the more mainstream words, so it's odd. It's a very odd thing to do. It's really funny though.
It's really.
I wonder who wrote that.
It made me upset.
I don't know who did Tim write that. Who wrote that? I want to know. That's the...
whoever did. I'm mad at you. You suck.
No, it was very funny.
No, it's me.
I like the concept that an air acolyte gains airbending and knew was like the head of the class. I think that's an interesting concept.
Yeah, I do like that.
Rude, though, like.
The next thing I think is this is just very surreal. This episode I would say is very surreal, and this is a very this is a big part of it. They had a split screen.
With, yes,
with Cora and,
I didn't think that was what you were going to talk
I was
about.
So, I was so tripped out watching that. I was like, what is going on?
Cora and Tenzin were talking on the phone. This is the only time we see Cora in the episode. And it's, what? They have a split screen? This has never happened before in Avatar.
Of course, we didn't have phones before, so now we have like radio, and like we didn't have this.
But they like have phones, so I don't know.
I have no comments for this. This is a phone. First they have this map in episode 2, the Chibi map, and now they have a split screen. What is happening with this show?
Yeah, what are they doing?
Good things. Very good things.
I don't understand. It's too it's too much. What? I don't know.
It is. I agree.
I mean like, that emotionally, just... but not like. I thought it was a fine plot device. It's. I actually, in terms of a critical analysis, I like that they're willing to do things like that. I think it opens more avenues for storytelling.
And especially as opposed to like switching back and forth screen to screen, that would have just been annoying.
I wonder if they wrote it like that, because this is a thing you could include in the script, but also they could have just done it in storyboarding.
That's true. I was actually just about to say that.
Also, they actually could have done it in animation too, because they could have just storyboarded both halves and then just cut them together, maybe in animation or post-production. Interesting. So this could have happened at any point in production, I think.
They could have just, hey, let's do this.
Yeah, I wonder when that happened. I feel like Brian's probably responsible for it. I would say, I mean, Brian does most of production, so they... Chances are, unless it was in the writing process. Anyway, it was just very interesting. Cora didn't really say anything super interesting. We kind of had Bolin awkwardly there talking about Opal. That was kind of unnecessary.
It was cute, though.
It was cute, but it was like Tenzin's like, why do I need to?
Yeah, Tenzin's like, why am I here?
And then, yeah.
I did like Cora's line, though.
What was the line?
I like conflict resolution is what I do.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Okay. Oh, that feels... made me really emotional because Aang said the same thing.
Aang says helping people, it's what I do. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Frying, that's what I do.
Conflict resolution just completely reminds me of The Great Divide because that's all what that episode is all about, for Aang. So it's very Avatar-y. That was what if you want to give, like, say, I agree, The Great Divide's the worst episode after, which it is, but the main thing that it accomplishes for the overall plot of the show is that it like adds this thing to Aang's overall character arc, and the character arc of him being the Avatar is like this conflict resolution plotline, which I think is kind of explored here with Korra, which is kind of interesting. I like it.
Well, it's kind of funny because what we've done, with, especially with Book 2, is we've lessened the role of the Avatar a lot, so that the fact that they've put that in is kind of like a throwback almost, like... Like Korra as the Avatar is in transition. Like, we don't know what the Avatar is doing or going or anything. So I felt like I'm really intrigued as to why they did that.
At this point in the show,
was it just a throwback, or
I think they're also showing like that she's like more confident now.
Yeah,
I think it's multiple. There's multiple things. It has an effect on Korra's character, like I was saying. It has the Avatar role type thing. And I think the Avatar role is interesting because right now the Avatar basically has no role.
Yeah,
it
has
world,
no purpose.
Which I think, which I'm getting pretty confident.
Oh my god, poor Korra, she has no purpose in life.
She does, she has zero. There is nothing, right now her only job is to find the airbenders, so they don't really need her to do that.
And I'm getting pretty confident that this will be explored in Zaheer's plotline.
It
seems like that's what this is going to be about, because if you start looking, the Avatar... By eliminating the past lives and things like that, the Avatar just has nothing to do. And it would make sense, considering Zaheer seems obsessed with the Avatar, so.
Can I have your autograph, Korra?
I wonder what they're going to meet. I wonder
That's
what he's
totally
going to say.
That's totally what's going to happen. They're not even going to kidnap her. They're just going to be like, oh my god.
We're your number one fan. I told you, it's going to be a tea party. I told
I'm
you.
I'm your biggest fan.
Exactly. So then we get that more Jinora, which is incredible. And she's like, gets annoyed at Tenzin for treating them too harshly. That might have been a scene before.
Facial expressions throughout this episode just kill me every time.
Yeah. Well, you're saying that to me, bro? But yeah, geez, she's just... It's like I was freaking
so
out.
So much sass.
I mean, I like that she like stood up to Tenzin, but I really don't like that whole trope of like a daughter saying to their dad, "I'm not a little girl anymore." I really am sick of that.
Did she say that line?
Yeah.
She literally said that.
That's funny. I'm too distracted by Turret making facial expressions. I freaked out in A New Spiritual Age in that one scene I kept talking about because of the range of emotions on her face. And this is like times 10 in this episode. Because Janora is just not a character that expresses emotions. And so like when you get things like this with her doing, with her just like having, it's just, oh my God.
Having a
like
face.
The facial there is so much sass on her face this episode. It's ridiculous. Like I can't handle it.
I like how she progresses from, like, Kai, pay attention. You're supposed to pay attention to, like, storming out on, like, the whole class.
Yeah.
Teach your own class.
Yeah. Teach your own class.
So boil your own water. Oh, my God, there's so much Pema. There's so much Pema everywhere.
Boil it yourself. She's learning from Asami. That's what it is.
So then she asks Tenzin if she can get her tattoos, and she's like, what? No, yeah. And then they give the class to Iki and Mila, which is when we have that line before, which we already talked about. Okay, so I think in Jinora-focused episode, the most interesting thing about this episode is just inventing these, what do they call them? Bison rustlers. These villains that we've never seen anything like this before. Just coming up with this concept out of the blue for half of an episode. It's so,
can't see me, but I'm hugging my bison.
It's so odd that I think it's actually like very well done. Actually, yeah.
It's like it's very Avatar too, where you just run into pirates. Like you never know what's gonna happen in an Avatar.
We haven't really seen this before in Korra.
He was wearing a baby bison belt.
So okay. He was wearing a bison belt, which is insane.
It was a baby one.
This is one of those rare times for me, like the show just introduces a concept. It makes sense.
And then
it's well
used.
It's emotionally impactful. It just checks off everything.
Like, how is this show Y7? I don't understand.
Seriously, it was really dark.
Like, first of all, I thought I was messed up when they blew the boat up, and then this happens. I'm done. Like, I can't. There's nothing this show won't do.
Bosco is.
And not only it's not just an adult bison. It's a baby bison.
It's
they
a baby
killed a baby
one.
Bison.
That's why I'm saying how it's dark.
It's very dark. They capture them and they say we're going to bring the bison.
They literally put children in cages.
and the babies though.
They say he says he talks about how the Earth Queen wants various meats for there. He says I even heard she ate her dad's pet bear. How amazing is that line?
I love how everyone like accepts like it's like that it actually happened. Like even if he said it happened.
It definitely didn't happen, but
it definitely did though.
No, like, how would Quay allow that? That is not happening.
He's off on his like adventure.
No, he and brings Bosco with him.
This is still another weird thing about like how is her dad like how is she, like it doesn't make it she eats flying bison and then like she's allergic to ant, like this doesn't make any sense. Her father's way. I don't understand how does this happen. Oh my God.
It's so in this one scene we get both him wearing a baby bison belt and him saying that a animal we saw in the previous series was eaten.
He talked about they eat bison and she ate the bear.
I'm like, what did Nick have to say about this? Because Nick gives notes on the show during production.
They probably laugh because they're evil.
how did you let this happen?
I don't. Oh, it's
like
insane.
I want to know how the children feel. I'm 18 and I'm upset about it.
I feel like the children are like, oh,
I'm older and I'm upset about it. Okay?
Like I'm clutching my Appa plushie. Like,
yeah, seriously,
I
can't see me, but I haven't let go of my bison.
I haven't either. Like I've been carrying him around.
Okay, out of curiosity, what was it that's so emotionally impactful about?
They're babies.
Try to articulate beyond that.
Okay, like first of all, they're so we have I guess the biggest thing is that in Avatar in the original series, there's one bison. His name is Appa, and he does everything. Now we have Oogie, and we've realized that they've made a resurgence, and now we finally see baby bison. Like we've had baby, you know, like the tea party.
Yes.
Now we have more baby bison, and now apparently, since we have a resurgence of people have decided it's okay to eat bison. That's not okay.
Yeah, it's not okay. And also, like, if you're a human being, you should feel, like, something from this.
And I think a big part of it is also because Appa was Aang's spirit guide, like, animal guide.
Yeah. For me, I think the the not spending any time on bringing back Bison. Kind of just, I don't have an emotional impact. I don't feel attached to Oogie like that.
I'm not as attached to Oogie.
Mm-hmm. Like, but that being said, the baby Bison
are. I'm not even that
are,
attached to Naga.
I feel the baby Bison are like cute enough that I do care. So that's what I would say about that. Is that the baby Bison emotionally impactful, but not maybe the rest
just
of them?
Just the idea that they're taking baby Bison and they're eating them is just what just kills me.
It's sick, man. It's sick and wrong.
I mean, I guess I feel differently about this because I think it's sick for all animals. Like, so I guess it's maybe different in my head. It's like, okay, this is just what I see in everyday life. But
well, when you put it that way, it should be make
well. And I guess especially in the context of this season, the air nomads are coming back. Like, airbending is returning to the world. Aang's not there to see it. And they're just killing flying bison.
Yeah.
They're eating it.
That's coming with me.
Like, oh, my God.
I still would have been upset if it happened, like, last season. But, like, this is so ridiculous. This season's literally Aang the season. This is the season Aang wanted to have, but he's not there to be for. Like, he's
okay,
not
don't
there.
Even, don't even with that. Don't. Come on. Don't. Too far, man. Too far, man.
Dylan.
No.
Dylan, you know how I feel about the past lives. No. You can't even play that card. You
I don't even. They didn't mention him, and they didn't bring this up in the episode. I don't want to deal with this. Okay, too much already. In between this, we have actually a scene that everyone's been wanting, and it's like, okay, add this to the checkbox of things. Their plot lines. They addressed in this episode, which we thought they never would. A Pema and Tenzin scene.
Where
Pema talked more than one word, and it's like actually addressed her as a character. This episode did more to flesh out Pema than any other episode.
So happy.
My mom goes, "Who's that?" She's I'm like, "That's his wife," and she's like, "Oh, that's what I thought." So it's like
And has she seen the entire series?
Yes.
Awesome.
She sat there with me, like,
nice.
Before... And I'm just like, okay, Bob.
Oh, who's
she acts like she's not interested, but then she just, who's that?
It's
like, oh my God. I'm like, this just sums up Pema.
Wait,
like,
but she watched, so she had seen Pema before and she was still like, who's that?
Yes.
Oh, great.
She's not, she never talks. Who would know?
Yeah,
who
like,
she
who
is?
Notices?
She stands around, though, with the children.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But, so of note is that we did a shipping poll on Tumblr this past week, and Pemzin, the ship of Pema and Tenzin, was actually like the third most shipped Avatar ship.
I know you're not supposed to do that, but I can do it.
It's like somehow over half of the people in the fandom just ship this.
I mean, they're married.
So you kind of have to.
Like, why is this ship we're voting on?
Exactly. I was going to ask, why'd you put it on there? They're married.
Like, I ship past Linzin. Like, obviously, I don't want Pema and Tenzin to break up.
Shipping is
would...
not just something that is a potential. It could be an actualization as well.
No.
Like, Katang, it happened.
Yeah, and it's still a ship. Okay, guys. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I just love that this addresses Pema's past, this scene, too.
Yeah.
Even though Tenzin's kind of like...
I love how he apologized to her. Like, the look she gives him, and then he's like, I'm sorry. Like,
yeah.
I just love, like, Tenzin's like, I'm sorry. We obviously know who's the boss, and it's Pema.
Also, Pema whenever they like have a close up on Pema, she just looks very young.
She does.
She has gray in her hair, though. I noticed that this episode.
She's like she's had four kids, but she how old is she? How old?
That's
is what
my mom said. My mom's like, but she looks really young.
She looks 30s, and
they're
she might 15 still
years
actually
apart,
be.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think she might actually be 30.
And what is he? 50? So he's
51.
She's 36.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So then we go back. So we have someone.
I did math. Be proud of me.
Good job.
We see. I forget which acolyte or airbender it was, but it's like they say Jinora went off with her boyfriend, and then Tenzin's like, "What, Kai? What? What?"
He knows.
He knows. No, but the problem is they haven't called each other that, so it hasn't. It's not real yet, guys.
They will eventually.
It's not real. Anyway.
They'll be calling each other sweetie. Don't worry.
I can't handle. Oh my God! If that happens,
they better not do that. Okay.
They better not, though.
Yeah, they better not. Yeah, for real.
I mean,
honey.
No. I actually would like it, but emotionally,
honey,
no.
Honey, I'm home.
Anyway,
like on an emotional level, I couldn't handle it.
Yeah, Jinora says she can't do the astral projection because she's like cramped up, but she does which is like, what? Well, okay, like, does that make sense? I don't know, but she sends a spirit.
Yeah, that kind of. I was like, what?
She didn't
okay.
do any astral projection though.
She sends a spirit instead. She just calls. She can just manifest a spirit in her hand.
Yo, Boomju, I need some help.
The spirits are there.
How does she manifest a spirit? Like, does that make any sense?
She just, like, reaches out.
And yo, hook me up.
So, they're all like, All the spirits are all around.
She has the spirits on speed dial.
So what that must imply... Like State Farm. Yeah, what Jeff is saying, this must imply that the spirits are just there, but just...
State Farm is there.
But just not visible, right? Like,
yeah, well, because we saw this particular spirit earlier in the episode.
He materialized. It flew like along.
Ah, yeah, he was flying. Yeah. So maybe he just...
Around
maybe
somewhere.
He just likes Jinora, yeah. So
can we talk about how all the spirits look like Pokemon, though? Because it really bothers me. They look like Pokemon. Like, they need to get a little more original, I think.
I mean, Pokemon are, like, literally anything, so anything could look like
No, but literally, one seriously looked like an actual Pokemon that exists. I can't remember what it was, but we'll talk about it later.
Pokemon, these days, they're just making the Pokemon that are, like, actual things.
Listen, there's a Pokemon that's a chandelier,
It's like the South Park parody where one is just shoe.
Oh, that's my what God. It is. Anyway. I didn't know you watched South Park. We have to talk later.
Minimally, but yes.
Oh, my God.
Where were we?
I don't know.
Cleveland knows.
We were spirits,
they know? Rescue. They go and rescue them, and this is the. And...
Wait, but how? I like how Boomy can like talk to this. Well, kind of like understand.
Oh yeah, they communicate.
Boomy says, "I get the gist."
Well, no. What I liked about that scene was Boomy couldn't understand Jinora's guide, but Boomy only communicates.
He could understand
Boonju. Yeah, I like that. It was very detailed. It's like
he what is only. Is Jinora trapped in a well?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like, I like that part.
He only communicated with Boomju.
And I also appreciated that they didn't go like this whole guessing game. I really like immediately Boomy knew what was going on.
Same. I'm glad he wasn't like, oh, like, are my pants on fire or something stupid? I don't know.
What?
I don't know. What? I was trying to think of something.
I agree with Allie. Like, I
no guessing.
We're of the same mind.
What I really like about the entire rescue sequence when Boomy rallies all the airbenders, I don't know if it's not as emotionally resonant as the rest of the episode, but I like it because it justifies the training sequences previously.
Yeah,
because those are the weakest part, and then it like makes them better.
And it also brings in the whole there are no airbenders, and we have to stick together.
Yeah, I like it that he said that.
And like it's kind of we're slowly beginning to see the Air Nation reborn, because it takes more than just having airbenders to have the Air Nation to really bring balance back to the world. We have to have that. Like, that unity.
Mm-hmm. Sense of community.
Yeah.
I just rhymed. We rhymed. Oh, my God.
Oh, we're cute. Oh.
Okay. No. Okay. Anyway, Jinora gets captured again. This is the second time this season where she's
like,
been.
Can we not capture the 10-year-old
damsel
girl?
In distress?
Yeah, this is, annoys me.
I mean, she's 11.
So, yeah. But she's apparently a master.
Still not
like,
okay.
Apparently. Well, really according to her boyfriend, so we don't know that for sure.
Oh my God, are we just calling? Is that a thing now? Is that just a thing now?
We're just talking about the boyfriend.
I can't handle that. I can't.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm doing it.
What do you guys think of Kai in this episode? Do you find him more sympathetic?
I actually like him.
Oh my God, I love him.
I still think it's funny you called him a bad boy. Like, he's literally said bisons, and he's like, we gotta go play with the bisons. Like, he's obsessed with them.
No, but he's like, hey, do you want to sneak out, like, for a while? Like, so your dad doesn't know? Oh, let's go.
Yeah, but then he brings her to a bison, baby bison.
Yeah, like, then he takes her to baby bison.
And he's like, oh, how cute. He literally says, how cute.
Some baby bison.
Jeff, I know you've had problems with Kai's sympathetic level before.
Incredible the turnaround. I don't have a problem with him.
I don't think he's the same character. I think it's just that he's the same character model, but now he's a different person.
Yeah.
They just swapped him.
Yeah.
It just took baby bisons to change everything.
It's like, what happened? My brother didn't come back from Israel. They just put another person in his place. That happened to Kai.
I don't think this, except for that one instance, I don't think this happens to real people. But
you know what?
But they did kind of have, you know, Kai was, you know, he lockpicked the cage.
Yeah.
They like, yeah, that one thing. It's like, okay.
That
like,
one thing is.
Him being, like, training in the Northern Air Temple. There is nothing to steal up there. No one has anything. So
that's actually a really good point.
It is a good point.
Yeah.
It's like rehab for him.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's kind of like a temptation thing.
Rehab.
Like,
stealing rehab.
That's like actually a really good point. I didn't think of it. Yeah. I wonder if they did that intentionally. I mean, it's not. They couldn't have because it's a plot device, but that must have been coincidental. Wow.
But also, I mean, when you think about it, him stealing is what got him caught by the Dial E, so he might be like, kind of like not wanting to, like,
it's like, yeah, let's not mess.
Yeah, they're like reforming his character. Yeah,
well, it's kind of like, especially going through the prison experience, like, he's kind of like, I don't really want to
go back,
you know,
there.
Yeah,
so you have to worry about this point about his character just being the boyfriend. Like, we literally said we're gonna refer to him as
I was
the boyfriend.
Kidding,
no, but he doesn't do anything other than care about Jinora in this episode, right?
And
so,
the bison
and the okay, he does care about the bison.
Bisons.
So I guess his character bisons. is he's the new airbender, right? That's what he represents. The episode title is Original Airbenders, which refers to Tenzin and kids, and he is a new airbender. So I guess that's what they're trying to do. Mm. We'll see if it's successful. And the problem is, they can't spend too much time on him because there's just so much else going on this season. So I'm 100% confident he's a book four character as well at this point.
Surely.
Yeah. And maybe the romance with Jinora continues.
That's true.
By the way, in that shiphold, Jinkai, which is what I'm calling, slash Kainora,
it happened!
What?
You called it Kainora.
I said slash Kainora, was tied with Kurosami for the most popular ship in the fandom for the entire thing. So it's just very popular right now.
Yes.
Good job, guys.
The real thing about that poll is that Kurosami is the most popular Kurosami ship.
How is that weird?
Because it seemed infathomable before this book. Like, if we did that poll before, it would have been a very low percentage.
Definitely.
Without fathom.
Exactly. That's the definition.
I just watched Megamind, so.
I did. Megamind's a good movie, I haven't seen it in a while. The rescue sequence, Jinora says, free the bison first. Is that a thing a person would actually say?
His mother too.
No, it's totally a thing. It's totally a thing an airbender would say, Dylan.
It's not a smart thing to say. It's just like, you got to fasten your oxygen mask first before you help someone else.
Yeah, exactly.
You free the other airbender before you help the bison.
Yeah, and Delaney, you know, this was the most Hermione reminiscent line I've ever heard from
Jinora. And I was so, oh my God, Dylan, I can't even.
Explain to the listeners who don't know, because I'm confused.
You what?
Explain to the listeners, because I'm confused.
What, about the Hermione thing?
That Jinora is Hermione?
It's something Hermione would say.
Because she's very sympathetic to the,
animals?
No, it's the
she rescued the ugliest elf cat ever.
The what do they call it? The Dobby house elves. Yeah, she's just that whole that organization that she made. That whole thing is very. It's more than Hermione. It's just a very tropey thing to say, right?
Yeah, it
the,
is
the Hermione Jinora character.
But
anyway,
the fact that they were taking them to eat them, like, I feel like it was acceptable.
They're taking them to eat them.
Like they were gonna kill and eat the bison.
They weren't gonna eat them.
If
it had been like, let's say, obviously this wasn't gonna happen, but if it was like some waterbender kid in there, it wouldn't have made any sense. But she's an airbender. It makes sense.
I feel like we didn't talk enough about Jinora. Like, I know we talked a lot.
Oh my God.
But we didn't, like, actually
get. We didn't talk enough about Cora because she's not even here.
She's but, like, I don't know. I think we went over all the scenes, but just. Like,
I do agree with you. Like, I'm surprised, like, we haven't talked as much about, like, Jinora.
She, I want to like list Jinora facial expressions I've seen. No, but I feel like that wouldn't be exciting, so we're not going to do that.
Please don't.
Anyway,
we can make that a top 10.
I don't know. I should try to explain my emotional attachment. I feel like, because I don't think everyone has this. I don't know. She's just by far the most sympathetic character to me. That archetype is already extremely sympathetic, and then for her, with a new spiritual age, me like that being my favorite episode. And just her development throughout this entire thing, and her just having such significant role here, a continued role, whereas you were wondering whether she's going to get clumped back with the air kids. And by the way, Ikki and Milo have never been separated. They're just one character at this point. But
they're just one.
Yeah, they really
Ikki didn't even have any lines.
Ikki didn't say anything.
I think, didn't she say something?
Oh, Ikki, no.
No, she didn't say anything.
Milo talked, but Ikki
No, she said something. She said, like, she yes,
not.
Or something like that.
No, she did
well,
not.
That doesn't really count.
She definitely had, she said a word, at least.
She didn't! Oh, my God.
Are you serious? I will bet you money.
I'm 100%.
No, I will.
Go, you want to
When Tenzin said Ikki and Milo in charge, she said something first.
She did not say anything!
Yeah,
they
she did.
She literally just went over.
No.
Oh my God! They
just
literally.
Go find it and edit it.
I will fight you on this. She didn't say anything.
One of us is going to look very bad after because we can just
go
check
this
out.
Yeah, it's going to be you.
It's not me. Anyway, I don't know, but yeah, Jinora just extremely sympathetic. Just I talked more about her just the emotional range here when it wasn't before, and also you combine that with the fact that her connection with Kai, both romantically and just as a friendship, like it's very
and it's not forced, like, either, which is I think the best thing.
I love that they're just like hanging out. Yeah.
Yeah, they're just like adorable.
Yeah. I don't even know. I can't. And it's not like creepy
like Bolin and what he was doing, like the like when he was like trying really hard with Opal. They're just being cute together.
I'm trying to think if I had this type of reaction. You have to understand how damaging this was to me watching the episode. I don't know if I had it during Avatar or not. Like, I know during the finale, during the series finale, yes, but like in random episodes, this is just a random episode. I don't know if it.
Well, for me, it's the headband. Like, this is like.
Yeah, but that's like, yeah, that's okay. This could be the head. Yeah, okay. That's a good comparison.
Like, anything. And I can relate. Janora is my number two, and of course, I am Hermione. That is my that is who I am. So then, like, Janora.
That is who
like,
you are, okay.
I am.
Where's your accent?
Where's your accent?
Okay. Really? Okay. That's what you're gonna focus on anyway.
Well, obviously.
But like Janora's my like she's my second favorite character, and like I like, you know, I relate, you know, to that. I guess what you say archetype. I think that's what you said, archetype. Mm-hmm. So like, oh my god, Janora.
Yeah.
And then of course we on top of that we had adorable baby bison.
Yeah. You pair the most adorable little girl with the most adorable little bison and
the most adorable little boy.
And Kai, too, is pretty adorable. Yeah, it's just not
his
fair.
His hair is just adorable.
Of heart.
And
can we talk about Kai's eyes? Like, his eye color just kills me. Like, I'm just like...
I don't know what it is. Is it like...
It's just... It's like the darkest forest green ever.
Oh, my God. That reminds me of something else.
I was staring deeply into his eyes. It was bad.
Jeff?
It's just like that comparison, Lion King 2. That young... Scar.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Oh my god. It's totally the Lion King.
Oh, and another random note: Janora and Kai are wearing the same outfit now, which is
so
like
they're dating.
Yeah.
They match.
Yeah, they're dating.
No, it expands the emotional impact.
Now we need Korra and Asami to wear the same clothes.
Yes.
Anyway, I mean,
Kai to shape head.
I don't even know how the episode ends, but.
It's happy. It ends happy.
Oh, yeah, it was happy. Oh, yeah, she hugs Tenzin.
That
was, oh, my
God.
They're
playing
with
the bison.
It ends happy.
Oh, yeah, the bison licks her, and then she, like,
laughs. They're floating up,
like,
I didn't sign up for this.
Oh, yeah, and then they fly. It's like, what? Why are they flying?
And they're like, whoa, 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 what? Get me back down. What is this? It's adorable.
Okay, anyway.
Also, wait, that bison that falls from the cage.
I was so done.
But someone was like, I thought it died and I had a mini heart attack.
Well, that's another
just thuds down, yeah.
That's another reason why we were upset about the bison villains, because they were so dopey. They're awesome.
They're
like,
so cute.
You know what the bison looks like is Chibi-Appa as the play
toy. I mean,
toy.
That's what they are. They're little appas.
Yeah, but I'm talking about like the stuffed animal that Korra wins in.
Oh. Oh my god.
That's what they look like.
Is, what they
is that stuffed like. Animal?
Because you know bison, and that was a plushie of a bison. So
yeah, but it's not realistic. But now it is because they just have giant eyes.
You
want one? I want 10. I want 30.
That would be the most popular product if they sold. Anyway, it ends on a happy note. Everyone was like, "Wow, a Korra episode ends happily." That never happened before.
Seriously, I'm like,
we're not on a cliffhanger.
But yeah, now we get. I think next week's two episodes actually might go together, even though we don't know the description for the second one because Nick doesn't understand what they're doing. But it seems like it's going to be okay. Attempted kidnap and resolution, like two episodes that go together. Anyway,
attempted kidnap.
Oh, so can we talk about the whole? Oh, sorry.
And then actual kidnap. Was it? I wonder where the. By the way, the major thing from the trailer we haven't seen is the Korra and Asami desert. So we'll on the lookout for that. Last thing, Dave, Delaney.
Oh, I was gonna say about the Titanic thing. Like, Zalfu is the safest. Why do you keep saying this, guys? Like, you're just asking.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Stop it.
I've noticed that they are still.
You're just jinxing yourself.
They
said it like four times. Like, they need to stop.
You said Titanic. I thought you were talking about
Okay, that's enough. Does Opal, decide to go to the Northerner Temple?
Yes.
Okay, but they're still there. So that's the status. Okay.
They're probably getting ready to leave.
Okay, grading this episode.
Well, really random observation first, though. This is the Northern End Temple, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are no people living here.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Oh my god, like, what happened?
Wait, what?
Well, there were people there. Like,
happened to Teo and all of them? Like, those people who
they
lived
died.
There. Okay,
they
thanks.
Died.
Okay, Ali, Bob.
Yes, they're all dead.
People die,
apparently,
you guys.
Apparently,
okay.
People also have children.
And they leave the
maybe they just kicked him out. Like, they were like, Bob.
The airbenders are back, so we're going to have to ask you to leave.
Yeah,
bye.
That's what happened. Canon, this is what happened. Tenzin's like, Bob, get out.
Okay.
Like, Tenzin wrote a letter ahead, like, get out, we're coming. Like a 30-day eviction notice, like, that's what he sent.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll. Like, I wonder if they'll address that.
Forced to leave
The Teo thing. Anyway, I really hope it is the Northerner Temple. Are we sure?
They've said it like four times.
Okay, good. Anyway. I was not coherent while watching this. Well, like, I did watch it twice too.
During the episode, they did say it, but it was all leading up to the episode. They said Northern Air.
They said it in the episode.
They did.
Yeah, I think so. Once.
Anyway, okay, let's grade. Because
I mentioned it was in the north.
What? Okay. Again, same grading scale. Allie.
8.
Okay. Why?
We basically. I don't like explaining. We basically. I mean, we covered why. I mean, I was going to give it a lower rating, but. With all the feels it had, I mean, like, with all, like, the emotions it gave me, not just, like, because of Avatar, but, like, even, like, with the bison and Boomy and everybody, it was really, really good.
Delaney.
9.999.
Oh!
Don't even.
I can't express, like, the love for this episode. And you guys need to think about that, because the other episode was Lynn, and I didn't write it this high. Like, this episode, I just...
I'm just not paying attention to anything.
It was perfect.
Jeff.
I would say 9.2. Like,
I
really enjoy caring about stuff in that episode, and this episode made me feel very many feels, very much many.
Very many, very much many feels, yeah.
Yes, most excellent feels. So.
Yeah, I agree. It's for me, it's like very hard to evaluate critically when I'm just feeling incredible emotions.
See, that's
it.
Why I rated it an 8. You
that's
guys
why
don't...
I gave it a 9.99, because I'm going to regret this later, but right now it just feels.
I think one point is... That has to be me having more of an emotional reaction to this than any other episode of Korra. Let's be clear. Any episode before this has to be worth something. But at the same time, I did watch it again, and I tried to look at it critically, and structurally this episode is very sound. I think introducing this, I forget what they keep calling them, bison wrestlers, is an extremely interesting plot point that actually works really well. I think humor-wise, the episode is very good. It has, like, the romance stuff with the Jin guy. It explores characters in Pema, Tenzin, who've been not the focus in previous episodes. We still check in with Korra in an interesting way with the new inventive side-by-side.
And they bring back parenting with Aang.
Even though it's very subtle, they address the parenting again, which we saw last season. We have this, and it just, there's an overwhelming sense of airbender culture in this episode, which I think is really important to the season overall. It's
the
something,
season or the series?
The
like,
season.
Why wasn't this air?
Air,
like,
right?
I don't understand.
This is actually Earth. What it actually is Earth, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah, no, I mean, yeah.
It's book two,
really
Earth/air.
Yes.
And
wait, what?
It's just very, what do you mean, what?
What? Yeah, exactly, what do you mean, what?
It was very important. Anyway, it's and most importantly for me, Jinora focus is just extremely well done, and I feel like she's just such a non-entity in book one, and they've turned her into one of the most successful characters in the show at the expense of maybe Asami, who's not in these two episodes, which is bad. But
give it an 8.
But it's just a very it's like a success story for the side character. And the one who's most important to me.
It's like they're kind of retconning because the whole... Well, not really retconning. I mean, like, they're actually justifying because we have Jinora, you know, save the day. And now we're kind of like... Now we're kind of beginning to understand. That's what I've been getting. Like, that's what I've been feeling.
Yeah,
like,
I think this is part of an...
After the fact.
Part of, an overall plot thread for her. Plot arc. Character arc for her, which we're getting. And I really am hoping that this culminates in her being important in the finale. Which I suspect she will be. But anyway,
I mean, if she isn't, I would be surprised.
It seems like plot wise, she needs to be with the astral projection. Anyway, I think this
and just the whole focus on the air nomad culture. Like Jinora is, she's like, she really is. It sounds
she's
dumb,
part
the hermit,
of it. I think
she's so like, and she just embodies it fully as a character, and not just as Aang's granddaughter. Like as a character, like it's who she is. Like she's fully embraced it
as. In an episode of successes, the biggest success is the Air Nation characterization and focus and emotional attachments. I think that just all is done extremely well. Jinora is a part of it. And I think this is our third truly great script of this season of Korra. And it actually gives one to each writer, which is kind of insane. Like, We had Josh Hamilton episode 2 with an incredible comedic script. Mike episode 5 wrote an incredible characterization script. And this Tim Hedrick writes an overall just very well done script. I guess I'll give it a 9.5 right now. But that's a very mobile grade, and I think it could be higher or lower than that, but probably at least a 9.
I changed my rating.
Which is, no, it's very valid to give it like an 8. Like an 8's good.
Yeah, I want
to
give it an 8.3.
Okay, 8.3. Wow, that's very important. But yeah, wow, I don't know. I'm very likely to adjust this grade because I haven't, it's hard for me to
look
at it.
No, you're not.
It's hard for me to look at it objectively.
I'm not going to regret my grade. No, I don't think I will regret it.
The question for me.
I think you should.
For me, looking at the overall context of the season, the question is this episode or episode 2 better? And I think the answer is this episode. Even though episode 2 maybe hits higher highs, this is a more complete episode.
They're so incomparable, though.
Even within the season, it's incomparable?
I mean, they're so different. Like, I can't compare those two.
Yeah, and for me, the overall lesson here, I was extremely worried going in. This was the first one I hadn't seen because we deleted episodes.
Yeah, you were really pessimistic about
this. I wasn't pessimistic. I was just very interested to see what would happen. It was either going to be good
and
or...
it was the worst summary ever.
But it was either going to be good or great. Like, the rest of the season has been great. We saw one good episode 3, and it was great. So, just incredibly optimistic for the last 6 episodes now. I think now the big question is, can they stick the landing and make this one of the truly great television seasons? Because that's what we're looking at right now.
I mean,
I am so
it
happy
is already.
That we are optimistic.
I know. It feels very good to be. I mean, it kind of doesn't seem like it after we were mostly criticizing episode 6, but it was still good overall.
Well, speak for yourself.
Well, I was, true. Anyway. Okay.
I'm scared that it ended on a happy ending now.
I know, right? I'm pretty confident.
I'm uncomfortable with this.
The finale's going to be
just
bad.
Nervous.
Don't worry.
The finale's going to be bad. Oh, my God. We're all going to die.
Everyone's just going to die.
My big question is whether Zaheer is the villain for book 4 as well.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
I would like that, but it would be kind of weird because they had their own thing for each book.
Bring Amon back.
Please don't.
Okay.
Please don't.
Where's the evil bad guy?
We have a voicemail from Wow, It's Al, so let's listen to that.
Hey guys, it's Wild Al. Just wanted to hear your thoughts on Kai's recent violent outbursts that have been happening in quick succession these past couple episodes, and if you thought they're going to take him in a darker direction, possibly Zaheer's apprentice or something, or if they're just trying to build his character developmentally. Thanks. Love the show. Bye.
Yes, he was violent.
Yeah, we kind of ignored that. He reacts. Tenzin's like, never attack a helpless person. They make a big deal out of the fact that he reacts aggressively to the situation. So the question is, why did they do that? Because they're going to do this. So there's many answers because they're not just going to include something random. From an overall plot perspective, are they A, showing that he just cares about Jenora a lot? B, showing that he's not truly an new airbender. He still has his old tendencies. C, he has these underlying dark sides, which may come to light for the rest of the season.
I think if they were going to do that, they would have done a tight shot on his eyes.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
They didn't really make it, they didn't, have any ominous music or any close-ups.
Yeah.
Well, so
it would
like
feel pretty random if they brought that back.
Yeah.
I'd like to adjust, the whole, talking about how, he hasn't really changed. I feel like they're just switching, they're changing perspective on, stealing isn't the problem now. Now it's this.
For me, the jarring thing about the way they did that was that... we got another voicemail while we're doing this. Let's see if I can multitask and talk and get the prep the next voicemail, which I guess I haven't screened yet. The big thing for me is not that this happened, but that... Tenzin didn't react super negatively to it. It just seemed very jarring to me that Tenzin was like, hey, that was not what we do as airbenders, but whatever.
I think he was just, that's just how ticked he was.
It's supposed to convey the caringness for Jenora, but...
And the baby bison.
And the bison.
And kind of the relaxing going from drill sergeant to what Tenzin should be doing.
Yeah.
But I don't really that it seemed like a complete episode, but that seemed odd. And I think we're going to see. Hopefully, we see why it ended that way, and it wasn't just awkwardness. It was
like,
more
I don't
like,
think,
what are they doing?
I don't think they're really going to take him in a dark direction. But I don't know. I'm just curious, if it happens again, I don't know. Just kind of more an in general exploration. You're a kid, and you'd realize you have these abilities.
They could for sure get him to do something horrible if they Zaheer kidnaps Jenora.
They could, but I feel like they won't.
No more Jenora kidnapping.
Yeah, we can't kidnap Jenora.
No more kidnapping Jenora, please. It's Korra's
like turn. Jenora's reached her like max for being kidnapped. No more.
Three times.
Well, if we count Unalaq being weird and like.
Oh, that's true. Three times. Oh,
yeah, that's why I'm saying three times.
Can we stop with this? Okay. I see who sent
this in. Get with the program.
Water Shuriken on Tumblr says I sent in a voicemail. Hope wasn't too late. Wow, right on time for us to.
Good job.
So I have not pre-screened this, but let's
you get the award for timing.
Let's hear what Water Shuriken has to say.
Oh, hi guys. I hope this voicemail is not too late. But this is potato, and I really like these episodes. There was a lot of character development going on, something that we've been missing since book one, and there was a lot of shade thrown around in this episode, in both episodes, and it was really great to see characters fighting back against each other verbally, and, you know, using logic. Korra was, like, fantastic with logic for some reason.
Hey.
Okay, and Bopal for the win.
Yeah, you guys making fun of his name last week. Good job with that. Are you guys here?
No.
What?
Okay, anyway, that was... Delaney was not here, but...
yeah, I don't know what's
I don't
going
remember,
on.
I
don't think I'm innocent.
He said Bopal for the win at the end, yes, I agree.
Yes.
I don't remember. Obviously. Did he ask? Were there questions?
No.
I don't think so.
Okay, it was just comments. Good. Thank you for your comments.
Yes.
See, the problem, I'm unprepared. I usually screen the emails ahead of time, the voicemails, so I know what they're saying.
Sorry
so I can
if there was a question,
better.
But we're not going to go back and answer this.
I don't think there was a
thank
question.
Thank you for your thoughts. Those type of voicemails are fine, too. We don't have to ask questions. You can just give opinions.
I'm just kidding.
Just say how great we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
We have an email from Ryan who says, after thinking about what Sue said about how the Avatar should know all of bending techniques, it sounds like a great idea. The list of bending abilities is getting quite large and diverse, and enemies who specialize in one or more seem to always have an advantage. Do you think new Avatars should be required to master all sub-bending techniques in addition to every element, even controversially bloodbending?
Well, who's going to enforce that?
Well, can I tackle it?
Well, it's more like it's more
like
he's saying like, okay, the standard Avatar training right now is water, earth, fire, air. Should we also add the subbending to it?
But then we have to think, because these specialized bendings develop because certain benders can do them. Like Aang can't metal bend, so like not every Avatar can do all of them. Like they can only do certain ones. So how can we really? That's what I was thinking. Like this is what I was talking about. Like why don't we include this email now when we were discussing it? Because like I was really thinking about it. It's just they can't do all of them. Because I don't think it's fair.
I mean,
it also shows that the Avatar's not perfect.
Don't like how they're treating metal like it's its own element separate from earth. Because, like, it came from earthbending. It's not like anyone can just metal bend if they're not an earthbender.
I don't like how widespread metal bending is.
Me neither. I really don't. I thought it was the only one, so I'm happy. But, yeah, no. I do like metal bending, but I don't like how they're making it, like, a separate thing. That, like, it seems like you can be a metal bender and not be an earthbender is what they're, like, making it seem like.
Well, I think the main reason behind that is because, like, the reason you feel that way is because there's a giant metal bending city, which I can understand.
But, like, no.
I don't feel that way about it. I'm just more like, I understand, like, why we have more, like, there's more specialized bending and more people can do it now. And I personally think that's simply because the population's increased because the war's over, so, like, people are actually living. And having children.
Su Yin, though, was treating it like it was its own element. She was like, the Avatar should learn all the elements. I was like, well, I mean, she did.
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Like, that's just a part of it.
I feel like we're focusing, like, as a fandom, focusing, like, on lava bending and all that stuff, that it's, these are subsets. There are only four elements.
Exactly.
And these are subsets of those elements. And not all the Avatars can do these subsets. Like, Aang couldn't metal bend. Apparently, Korra can metal bend. But maybe Korra can't. Yeah, Aang can do lightning. But maybe Korra can't.
We only saw him redirected. But yeah, maybe Korra
can. Well, I feel
like
if you can redirect it, though, you can produce it. But
Okay, wrapping this up.
Okay.
It was a good discussion. You're just upset because you weren't involved.
Yeah, seriously.
A little nitpick. I feel like Aang probably could have done metal bending if he wanted to. It just seems like his personality type, he'd be like, eh, I don't really feel like it.
I could do it if I wanted.
That's a good point.
That's a total theory.
We don't really know, yeah. Okay, I don't know if that answered your question, Ryan. I just don't have anything to say on this. But yes, good job, guys.
You interrupt us, so you don't have anything to say.
I just don't. I interrupt because we need to move on. RJ Burnt Toast says, on Tumblr, do you guys think the Earth Queen really ate Vasco. No. Or was that just a rumor?
I think it was just a rumor.
I don't think so. That'd be too much.
I'm going to have a hard time deciding who's the worst villain.
Also, how did Minghua learn to drive?
Thank you. I said that in Skype. I was like, I love how Minghua's driving.
Well, I want to know. Physics, someone who's good at physics, tell me this. How does the water stay around? That it can, like,
that's
move
what I was trying to figure out.
The water doesn't have a container, yeah.
It makes no
it's
sense.
It's just, it's, yeah. I don't think it makes it.
Maybe she used ice.
Yeah, hand. But how does water bending in general make sense? Like,
well, that's a whole other question. Not
so. It's like whatever to me.
Like maybe if her hands were frozen to it, it'd make more sense. Well, no, it still does. It doesn't make any sense. It makes zero sense.
Oh, what about what if she's just bringing it out of the air?
But I do like how she was the one to drive. Like,
yeah, that cracked me up.
Yes. Okay. That's it. Last note. Escalations on Tumblr has started a hashtag help Janora to get her tattoos 2K14 campaign. You should support them.
Oh wait, also Mel told me I'm plugging our Tumblr now that it's just so you can ask us stuff, and I assume Dylan's gonna post it somewhere because I don't know how to do it.
If you want to, you Ali and Mel started a Tumblr, which is I don't remember.
Essentially, if you follow Donkey Fang, Dylan, or me, you'll see it because we reblog it constantly.
Ask Ali Mel FTSW. And the other Tumblr of note is I started a personal Tumblr, which you can follow. Dylan.
Which is far less important.
Dylan FTSW. If you're sending asks to the F Tumblr, you should send it now to my personal Tumblr because I'm trying to avoid opinions on the F Tumblr, basically. So Dylan FTSW. Ask Ali Mel FTSW. Yes, Jeff?
That tag, like, help Janora get her stuff.
Yeah, I just saw that.
Like, K is usually an abbreviation, but in this case, it doesn't shorten anything.
Don't criticize Escalation's hashtag. It's She's great. A very good supportive podcast. Anyway, I don't know if we feel like doing the full credits. Let's see if they load. Okay, they did. Created host the podcast, co-host Ali, Delaney, Jeff, tech director AJ, Kevin, Jess, musical credits, Yoshida Brothers, Jeremy, Zuckerman, Luke, Trip, Logan, Banner by Kevin, Dongfing's owned by
that
Jake.
English.
Create contributors Garrett, Sierra, Nick, Devin, Lexi, and now Colin.
Name is now Coin. Sam, we decided Coin.
Sam has designated you Coin, Colin. That's Colin is a mini host.
I wasn't here for this.
And he has been on a few mini casts. Sam's on next week, so we'll truly see Colin's nickname. But as of now, it's Coin. So there you are, designated as Coin. If you enjoyed today's podcast, consider donating blah, blah, blah. You can click donate at dongufeng.net/podcast. Click donate at the top. Also, there you can see our bios. If you want to link to, I'll link to Ali Mel's Ask one. Yeah, that links to my personal Tumblr, too. And you follow dongufeng at dongufeng.tumblr.com. It's very important to follow us this week because this is my Friday Comic-Con, yeah.
This is insane.
Oh, yeah. Janet Varney.
And Dylan at dongwufeng.net, Twitter at dongwufeng. Follow D's Tumblr accounts, I say, on the outline. I don't remember
D's
writing that.
Tumblr accounts.
And
you don't remember them? Wow, good job.
I said I don't remember writing that. And you can send us voicemail but at the podcast page as well, although I think we might run out
of
space.
Post on the forums.
Post on the forums. I very much appreciate comments on the forums. Thank you guys for commenting on last.
I don't do it, so you should do it.
Thank you guys for commenting last week's podcast. This podcast started kind of shoddy because we had a bunch of issues, but we got there. So
most of them were...
Anyway, very excited for next week's episodes. Comic-Con, just
I'm
very exciting
scared.
Time for Korra.
Yes.
Any,
I don't know whether to be excited or scared.
Anything to end on? Jeff, you said you had something.
Bison babies.
Bisons. It should be bisons.
Oh, just
no, babies. Babies.
Bisons.
Ooh. I don't know how do you combine
bison.
Them.
Baby bisons.
There it is.
Yeah, dude, look at baby bisons.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, thanks for listening, guys. 1, 2, 3, baby bisons.
Baby bisons.
Baby bisons.
Baby bisons.